It's 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. He went in the front runner, but emerged a distant second place. Mitt Romney got what some called a South Carolina shellacking in the Republican presidential primary this weekend. Newt Gingrich was the clear victor with 40% of the vote, compared to Romney's almost 28%. Far behind were Rick Santorum with 17% and Ron Paul with 13%. The candidates all competed heavily in South Carolina with loads of negative ads, two televised debates, and explosive headlines that seemed to rock the race daily. After it was all said and done on election night, they set their sights on Florida, the next state in this GOP nomination drama.
I believe we'll give the American people a chance to decide permanently whether we want to remain the historic America that has provided opportunity for more people of more backgrounds than any country in history, or whether, in fact, we prefer to become a brand new, secular, European-style bureaucratic socialist system.
Our president has divided the nation, engaged in class warfare, and attacked the free enterprise system that has made America the economic envy of the world. We cannot defeat that president with a candidate who has joined in that very assault on free enterprise.
But I plan to be a little different. I'm going to go out and talk about how we're going to have a Republican Party, a conservative movement that makes sure that everyone in America has the opportunity to rise, not just those who have maybe advantage, maybe have had a little bit more opportunity than somebody else, but every person in America will have the opportunity to rise in America again.
I see our problems as a spending problem. Government is too big. We do more things, all the things we're not supposed to do, and we forget about doing the things we're supposed to be doing. So, as a modest attempt to get back to reasonable budgets, we want to have a $1 trillion cut in spending in 1 year.
Today in The Exchange, from the Palmetto State to the Sunshine State, we look at how South Carolina's dramatic results changed this race and how Florida may change it yet again. Let's hear from you, too. What's your overall reaction to what happened in South Carolina? And if you're a Republican, how did your candidate do there? And what do you think he needs to do next to win your party's nomination? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us a short email, the address exchange@nhpr.org. We have two guests for the hour joining us from South Carolina, Charles Bierbauer, Dean of the College of Mass Communications and Information Studies at the University of South Carolina. He's also a former White House correspondent for CNN. And Charles, welcome back. Great to have you. Thanks.
Thank you.
Also with us in studio, Dante Scala, Associate Professor in the Department of Political Science at UNH. He tweets at Granite Prof. And Dante, welcome back.
Good morning.
Well, your reaction, Dante, first. It was a big night in South Carolina.
It was a big night. It was a huge night for Newt Gingrich, who now has successfully performed his second political resurrection. We saw first he was given up for dead last summer, and then he came back, lost Iowa badly, though, and then lost New Hampshire badly as well. And I think at that point, you know, a lot of political observers, I think myself included, thought, well, okay, this is it. And if he's going to split that very conservative vote with former Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum, and Mitt Romney's path to the nomination looks pretty clean and pretty clear, but South Carolina changed all that. I mean, what was surprising to me was not so much that Romney lost necessarily. I thought that was plausible, but the depth of his loss from one corner of the state to the other among virtually every demographic group that you could think of. Really, he won them all here in New Hampshire, basically, almost all of them. He lost almost all of them in South Carolina. And so, once again, all that volatility we saw running up to the primary, we thought we'd reached a kind of a clear patch of road. But all of a sudden, there's a lot of ice on that road for Mitt Romney.
What do you think, Charles?
Well, Dante's hit some of the key points, and it is that Romney lost and Gingrich won on almost every demographic. Romney won only three counties, including the one I'm sitting in, Richland County, which is the center of the state, and Beaufort and Charleston. But it was such an enormous sweep for Gingrich, again, on the, something that reflected the nature of the debates, I suppose, was Romney sort of dismissing the notion that he's a rich guy. There was that moment when he said that he'd gotten some $300,000 in speech fees and said that's not very much. Well, he only won with South Carolinians who earn more than $200,000 a year. He only won with South Carolinians who have more than a college degree, that is to have a graduate degree. That's a pretty condemning swipe at a guy who wants to lead all Americans, not just the rich ones.
So dig into that a little bit more for us, Charles, if you could, please. You seem to be saying the debates played a role here in South Carolina.
Absolutely played a role. Again, the exit polling showed that a significant number of South Carolina voters did not make up their mind until 48 or 24 hours before the election, some probably as they walked into the polling station. And the debates were on Monday and Thursday, and in both of those, you could see Gingrich on the rise and Romney, if not falling, not improving. And I don't want to condemn his debate performance entirely, but it wasn't nearly as strong. It wasn't as aggressive. It wasn't as combative. And South Carolinians seemed to like the fact that Gingrich was very outspoken, very verbal, and did exceedingly well in those debates. Not to overlook the fact that there's another debate tonight and another one later this week in Florida. So those are becoming a very key component of the entire primary season.
Wow, Dante, maybe when the history of this primary is written, you know, it'll be called the debate primary. What do you think about what Charles says and how pivotal these debates were for Mr. Gingrich in South Carolina?
Yeah, I think there were two key points that reveal something about each of the main candidates. I mean, and their weak points. I mean, one was the Mitt Romney's tax returns, and which it was a question he faced because he hasn't released them yet. And it's a question he faced not once but twice last week in debates. And it was striking how in both instances he didn't have a clear, ready answer. And this is a campaign that prides itself on really thinking through all the contingencies and all the possibilities. And yet there he was when faced with the question that, well, your father – who ran for president 4 decades ago, had released all his tax returns. Will you follow suit? And he answered, maybe. You know, very defensive answer, very equivocal answer. Contrast that to Newt Gingrich, faced with this supposedly blockbuster interview ABC News had with his second wife, accusing him of asking her for an open marriage and so forth. And Gingrich faced that question right off the bat on Thursday night, and he proceeded to knock it out of the park. I mean, standing ovation. How dare you ask a question like that of us, of me, in a presidential debate? And the crowd, which was raucous even by the standards of this past year's debates, went wild. And that might have just been it.
You know, I have to ask you this question, Charles, and you're there. So given how conservative we are told South Carolina Republicans are, why do you think that interview with Newt Gingrich's second wife, as Dante said, saying she wanted to have an open marriage so he could continue seeing his now third wife, Calista, why didn't that have more of an impact with these conservative religious voters?
I can't speak for that slice of the Republican electorate, but when you listen to folks in the churches here in South Carolina, you hear a lot of talk about redemption. There's a sense that that all of us, speaking broadly, are sinners and we bear some potential, at least, to be redeemed. I think that that plays in there. I think that may be consistent with the evangelical beliefs that no one is immune from any of these temptations, but everyone is potentially redeemable. And I also think that what they saw in Gingrich was someone who said, yes, I had this problem. The accusations are false, is what his response was during the debate. But he has not He has not denied that that he had had extramarital affairs and that he's on his third wife. That's not that's pretty hard to deny. But it was the way he responded, exactly the opposite as Dante was suggesting. He didn't say maybe. He didn't waffle. He didn't equivocate. That went over quite well here.
Dante.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is I agree with that. And also, Gingrich will fight. And evangelicals believe that Gingrich will fight for the things that they hold most important. And, I mean, his response to John King of CNN, you know, very combative. A lot of Republicans in the base are looking for someone who will fight. And you hear Gingrich talk about, you know, war on religion. You hear him talking about, well, if Obama is elected to a second term, then we'll be that much further toward a secular European state, emphasis on the secular as well as the European. Evangelicals believe that Gingrich will fight for the things that are important to them. They're skeptical about Mitt Romney.
His commitment.
His commitment to those values, not just because of perhaps like the Mormonism, but because he doesn't emphasize those issues nearly as much as someone like Gingrich does.
Well, and here's one more question, and then I want to invite our listeners to join us. This is for you, Charles. So why didn't Rick Santorum do better? He ended up with about 17%. He seemed to have both the populist aspect of his campaign. You know, he's kind of came from hard beginnings, made a name for himself, and he has the religious conservatism and a solid marriage by all accounts. So it seemed like he'd be the guy to appeal to these South Carolinians.
Gingrich also used the Southern card, if you will. I'm a Georgian, as he says, although interestingly, he and Santorum both were born in Pennsylvania. But there's that degree of closeness. Yes, we remember Newt Gingrich. He was the congressman from Georgia. He became the Speaker of the House. I think he played that. He sounds more like us, which is an incorrect statement. I don't sound like a South Carolinian, but he sounds more like South Carolinians in one sense. He used that. And the other piece of this is that what had to happen here and what did happen to stem Romney's ride was that the right, the evangelical, the religious right, however we characterize it, the most conservative wing of the party, had to coalesce behind one of the several candidates. Perry dropped out. That helped. It had to decide between Gingrich and Santorum, essentially, if there was going to be any opportunity to stop Romney here. And I think that became a factor. It wasn't necessarily played up, or it wasn't.
And Charles, I got to cut you off there. I do apologize. We're going to a short break, and we'll finish up when we get right back.
Good morning, it's 9:19, and support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and support also comes to us from Waste Management. In 2009, Waste Management recycled enough waste to fill the Empire State Building 12 and one-half times. Information on how this is done at thinkgreen.com. And from Concord Regional Visiting Nurse Association, providing a wide range of personal care services and homemaking services to help you achieve greater independence, crvna.org. More on the results of the South Carolina presidential primary on The Exchange on NHPR and at 10 on The Diane Rehm Show. More on the GOP presidential race following South Carolina. New Hampshire weather today, cloudy with some scattered showers. Temperatures slowly climbing to 34 to 40 degrees by this evening. Tonight, cloudy with rain at times. Lows 34 to 40 this evening, but rising in the overnight. For tomorrow, it'll be clearing, breezy and mild. High temperatures 45 to 50 degrees. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at how the dramatic results in South Carolina's primary this weekend changed this race for the GOP presidential nomination. And in a little bit, we'll look at how Florida may change it yet again. Let's hear from you. What are your thoughts, your overall reaction to the results in South Carolina, really shaking up this race? And if you're a Republican, how did your candidate do in the Palmetto State? What do you think he needs to do next in Florida to win your party's nomination? Let's hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Or send us a short email, the address exchange@nhpr.org. And gentlemen, before we go to the phones, Charles Bierbauer, I did want to give you a chance to finish up your point. I had to cut you off there. You were saying the evangelicals in South Carolina had to pick, and most of them coalesced around Newt Gingrich.
That's it, essentially. You had Gingrich, you had Santorum, and for a while you had Perry. So long as the three of those were dividing that portion of the Republican vote, that left an opening for Romney to sail through, even though in all the polling here over a span of months, he was never much above low 30s and wound up at 28%. But the coalition happened. I mean, it came together behind Gingrich, and I certainly sense that his performance in the debates combined with the sense of there's a stop Romney urgency, those factors came together in South Carolina voters' minds pretty much the last minute.
And even though, Dante, that group of evangelical and religious conservative leaders that got together, you know, a week ago or so, they came behind Rick Santorum, but that didn't seem to help him.
Yeah, you know, from a political scientist point of view, this is a really good test case for the power of political elites in actually deciding the nominee of their own party. Because what we're seeing, you know, there's a theory out there that basically party elites, you know, once upon a time, primaries were created in the 70s, or the whole new process was created centered around primaries, and elites lost control. But over the succeeding decades, elites regained control, and thus, you know, party usually gets a nominee that the elites want. This will be a really good test case because here on the one hand, you've got, you know, evangelical elites, religious elites saying one thing, but then actual rank and file voters saying, no, we want something else. We really don't care what you say. If that plays itself out, like if Newt Gingrich becomes the nominee of the Republican Party, despite the virtual absence of any sort of elite endorsements, that'll really put us all back to the drawing board saying, well, who's in charge here, elites or rank-and-file voters?
Well, and the other elite wing of the party, if you could call it that, the sort of business Wall Street, that elite wing probably wants Mitt Romney, and he's not doing so well either, or at least didn't do so well in South Carolina.
Yeah, it's a real test. One reporter wrote over, it's could be a test for the soul of the Republican Party because they, Romney represents this kind of Wall Street wing of the party. Chamber of Commerce wing and, you know, Northeastern wing of the party. If you think of this regionally, you know, where is Romney won? He's won in his backyard. Where is Newt Gingrich won? He's won in his backyard. Rick Santorum arguably is the only one who's won outside of his backyard in Iowa. But the question is, who's the nominee who can knit all these different factions of the party together? Because arguably a New England Republican and a South Carolina Republican, they don't talk much to each other. They don't know much about each other. They don't value the same things. They both dislike Obama. But other than that, what do they agree on?
Well, real interesting. And let's go to our callers. Maybe they'll have an answer, Dante, to your question. Who is the person who can knit this party together, as you put it, and win the nomination? Give us a call. Tell us what you think. 1-800-892-6477. Russell's waiting in Dublin. Hi, Russell. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Well, I think I'm just echoing the last speaker. I think you have a marvelous graduate thesis here on the life and death of a political party. The Republicans were founded as a sectional party in the 1850s by people who were dissatisfied with the Democrats and the other major political parties of the day. And they were basically in favor of an abolition of slavery and the freedom of blacks. And their first candidate was a man named Fremont, for which a New Hampshire town is named. And their second candidate, a national candidate, was Lincoln.
So what's your point about this Republican primary that we're seeing now, Russell?
Well, my point is that we are going back to the fragmentation of the Republican Party and its return to being a sectional party. It's a group of economically disadvantaged, basically white voters.
What do you think, Charles Bierbauer? Russell, thanks a lot for joining us.
Well, let's not lose sight of the fact that we've only heard from three states, each of them somewhat idiosyncratic, none of them substantially large. We're the largest in South Carolina so far. Florida, much larger, much more diverse, different elements come into play. It is early in the process, even though, and I suppose we, the media, help this along by looking for quick and easy trends that we can spot and focus on. We're going to hear a lot about electability in the days and weeks ahead. And that may be part of the answer to your question about Santorum, with whether he would be as electable, less well-known, less visible around the country. Winning Iowa and winning it in a recount only counts for so much. I think when we see the debate debates this week, that the candidates are going to be very strong on the question of, I'm the one who can lead this Republican Party, whether it's disjointed or divided or fractured in any regard, and bring it back together.
All right. Thanks again for that call, Russell. Our number here in the exchange, 1-800-892-6477. We want your thoughts, reactions to South Carolina's results and how they shape the race for the GOP nomination from here on out. Let's take another one. This is Gordon in Hanover. Hi, Gordon. Thanks for calling in. Go ahead.
Yeah, my comment had also originally been to speak about the endorsements, particularly Perry's endorsement of Gingrich and how that's starting to coalesce the Republican non-Romney camp around him. And you've talked about that. I also wanted to mention that I think Newt Gingrich's political savvy should not be understated or overstated. I think his performance in Iowa, where he had agreed not to be negative, and the attacks by the Romney PAC, super PAC, I think it gives Newt Gingrich a lot of license to be pretty negative over the next, you know, the next several weeks, several months even. And in addition to that, I think in trying to get that non-Romney vote, I'll be interested to see how he and Rick Santorum start to interact with each other and if something will, sort of a deal will be struck there. And
right.
That's it.
Gordon, thanks a lot for your thoughts. Lots of good points there. Dante, what do you think?
Yeah, Gordon's right. I mean, I think Gingrich learned a lot from his near-death experience in Iowa, and he will be fighting fire with fire all week long in Florida. And certainly it sounds as if Mitt Romney is ready to take that fire to Newt Gingrich this entire week. You know, I guess it remains to be seen. I mean, the two candidates certainly agree on a lot. They agree on lower taxes, lower regulations. All the policy positions look more or less identical between Romney and Gingrich. But now it's more about a matter of framing and style. You know, what kind of person, what kind of leader do they want at the top of the party? And the electability question is really tricky for Romney because when electable candidates win elections, they win primaries, they win caucuses, and now Romney, he's no longer two for two, which is what it looked like the day after New Hampshire. He's now one for three, and the only one he won is in his own backyard. So electability is a problem if he can't win elections like the one in Florida next week.
Well, and all four of these gentlemen that we're talking about have questions surrounding their electability, and we'll talk about that. But speaking of Florida, I want to go now to our colleague Sergio Bustos. He's politics editor of the Miami Herald. And Sergio, we know you're busy. Thank you so much for taking the time out.
Great to join you.
Well, and thank you. And as I understand, the candidates are already there. Sergio, what's it like in terms of events, ads, activity there in the Sunshine State?
Well, it's kind of a shock because, let me put it this way, in Florida we're used to hurricanes coming from the Atlantic or the Gulf, and they set out there for a couple weeks. We keep watching them, see if they come here. Up until, Thursday morning or Wednesday night, we thought, Romney had pretty much wrapped up everything and Florida would be an afterthought in this campaign.
Right.
All of a sudden, we're faced with Hurricane Newt, Hurricane Mitt, and Hurricane Rick Santorum. And then, luckily, Hurricane Ron is going to skip us because he's skipping the state altogether. It's too expensive for him. And so it's going to be really a three-man race. And if you look at it, it really boils down to a two-man race. So we're really looking at the momentum of Newt Gingrich coming into Florida off South Carolina versus a really, really strong organization by Mitt Romney here in Florida, and not to mention a lot of money. And unlike Iowa and New Hampshire, where you can do a lot of town halls and shake a lot of hands, Florida is a TV market state, and it's 10 major media markets, so Romney is going to have the edge coming in, but Newt's going to have the momentum, which looks like it's already starting to push here in Florida.
So money and organization matter a lot in Florida, Sergio.
Yes.
Wow. How is Florida different from South Carolina, Sergio, politically?
Politically, this is a very complex state. You can divide it into kind of what I call three regions. the Deep South, which is the Panhandle, that's northern Florida, cities like Pensacola. You can even throw in, it goes all the way down to Disney World. You got central Florida, and then you got this bizarre South Florida area, which some people call South New York because there's so many New Yorkers down here, and other people call it the northernmost part of Latin America because of the huge influx of Latinos here, especially Cubans. I really don't envy these candidates because you have to tailor a message to each region, and in this 24-hour news cycle, that message is going to hit everywhere. I'll give you an example. Newt Gingrich has a radio ad down here in Spanish. It's a feel good ad, you know. I love Latin people. I hate Castro and all this. At the same time, you know, you hear him in the debate talking about making English the official language. Those are two kind of really opposing kind of points of view. But this is the kind of thing you have to do here: deliver different messages to different regions of Florida.
Very interesting. And it's interesting he made an ad in Spanish. One of his attack ads in South Carolina, Newt Gingrich, the big line against Mitt Romney was that he spoke French. So,
yeah, I didn't hear that one. But
well,
that's interesting.
Well, and it's much has been made of Florida, Sergio, being more politically moderate than South Carolina. Floridians say more reflective of the nation overall. So how does that play to the strengths and weaknesses of these three candidates going in? As you said, Ron Paul's kind of skipping Florida.
Right. Well, I don't necessarily disagree with that. However, there is a frustration in Florida. Floridians are furious with this economy. We have taken the brunt of this recession. We're still in it. We have this huge foreclosure crisis here. We have tens of thousands of homeowners underwater with their mortgages, including the person you're talking to. Unemployment is stubbornly high and doesn't seem to be moving much. And I think Newt Gingrich captured that sentiment. And, you know, he's angry, you know, and I think that's going to play well here. I think what's going to be tough for Mitt Romney is the Bain Capital controversy. The rich man, wealthy man who won't release his tax returns up until this weekend. That may not play well down here, as far as Rick Santorum's concerned, I think he's going to really struggle because people just don't know him, and he doesn't come across as fiery as Newt Gingrich does. And then the last factor in tonight is you'll see there's the debate tonight, and there's another one Thursday, and that could just add more momentum to Newt Gingrich.
Well, you mentioned the everyman versus the rich guy who doesn't understand the everyman. I watched all the speeches Saturday night, and I can't even count the number of times that Mitt Romney said, we cannot have a nominee who trash talks capitalism, basically. He made that point again and again and again. Are you saying, Sergio, that that's not going to go over well with Florida Republicans?
I don't think it's a message that sticks very well because down here we wrote a story about a Bain Capital company, I mean, one of the companies they had bought, and, you know, they laid off 400 people. It wasn't a clean-cut thing. I mean, there's capital, you know, I think Rick Perry talked about, you know, the vulture capitalist. I think that kind of message sticks more with some voters down here.
You know, one more question. As we said, Ron Paul is not competing really in Florida. He'll be at the debates, but he has said quite up front that it's a big state, it's an expensive state, and he'll do better in the smaller caucus states like Maine and Colorado that are coming up. I wondered, too, though, Sergio, I mean, Ron Paul has a libertarian philosophy that says, let's cut way back on government programs. How does that go with the retiree population in Florida who depend on Social Security and Medicare?
Very good point. I mean, he probably is doing himself a favor by avoiding Florida. I mean, that is really the third rail here as well. I mean, you're talking about millions of Social Security recipients here. It's just not a message that's gonna hit with these folks. That libertarian bent doesn't really exist among Republicans in Florida. They're either diehard evangelical conservatives or they're moderate conservatives, worried about taxes and the budget. This whole, you know, get the government out of my life is not as strong here, although there is a strong Tea Party contingent in Florida.
One last question for you, Sergio. Anything else you want us to know about Florida, the Republican voters there that, you know, you think New Englanders need to appreciate as they watch the results from your state at the end of the month?
You know, I think Iowa's helped us wipe away the 2000 shame of the counting of the ballots. I think Florida feels as if we're as influential as any other state, especially the smaller ones involved in this. And we do take our primary seriously. And I would really look at people watching from up there, look at turnout. I think Republicans are going to turn out in large numbers down here.
All right. Well, Sergio, great to talk to you again. Thank you so much for your time.
Sure. Good luck.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's Sergio Bustos again, politics editor of the Miami Herald. And Charles Bierbauer, boy, real interesting thoughts there from Sergio. Anything you want to add on to what he said?
A couple of things, but he hit so many of them directly. The last point that he made about turnout here in South Carolina was high, higher than probably expected, and in spite of the fact that we had heavy rains, at least here in the central part of the state. But also we have in South Carolina an open primary. That means that everyone has to vote. You don't register by parties here. So you've got Republicans, independents, maybe even a few Democrats who thought they'd voice their opinion on the Republicans. Florida, as I understand it, does not have an open primary. So it's only registered Republicans. And so that changes the middle of the ground. That changes the place, particularly where you want to appeal to the independents, those who cross back and forth depending on their moods and the choices that they have. Although, interestingly, even here, among the independents, Gingrich did slightly better than Romney did. But it's an important point worth noting. The other thing is, as Sergio mentioned, the impact of television. I think if there were two things, one was the debates, and two, this deluge of political ads, especially those from the super PACs, that is to say, large amounts of money being spent by individuals or entities outside of the candidate's own operations. In principle, at least, uncoordinated, in law, uncoordinated, although you could certainly see where the sympathies lie, and many of those were so strongly negative, this being the result of a Supreme Court opinion 2 years ago,
Citizens United,
in which the court ruled in a 5-4 opinion, narrowly divided, that this kind of political free speech was not only acceptable, it's permissible and had to be allowed. Interestingly, on primary day here Saturday, if you will, Justices Scalia and Breyer were in town for the South Carolina Bar Conference and spoke at the noon luncheon, a conversation which I was thrilled to moderate. And I asked them about Citizens United, and somewhat predictably, they held to their positions on the case in which Justice Breyer said that there is a danger when money equates to free speech, and Justice Scalia said, in essence, when it comes to
and Charles, I'm so sorry, I got to cut you back.
The more the merrier was his line.
Yeah, I apologize. We will talk more about super PACs after a short break and take more of your calls. Stay with us.
I'm Randy Benthien of Benthien Associates. Frankly, one of the reasons that we have done this for 23 years and know we're going to continue supporting NHPR is that so many of the people that make decisions in our business and nonprofit clients also listen to New Hampshire Public Radio.
For information about becoming an NHPR underwriter, visit the business support page at nhpr.org.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from PSNH, proud supporter of a University of New Hampshire study on New Hampshire habitats and wildlife. More details can be found at www.extension.unh.edu. And from Mountain View Grand Resort and Spa, a landmark luxury destination since 1865 and proud member of Historic Hotels of America, mountainviewgrand.com. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, with the South Carolina primary results in, we're looking at where the Republican presidential campaign goes from here. Join us with your questions and comments. What do you make of these dramatic results in South Carolina? What do you think it says about the Republican race and where that race might go from here as it moves on to Florida and other states? 1-800-892-6477 is our number. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Dante Scala, before we go back to the phone, phones. I did want to turn to you, too, on this very important point that Charles Bierbauer made, that Florida is a closed primary, meaning only Republicans can participate. South Carolina is an open primary, like we have here in New Hampshire, where anybody basically can participate, even Democrats, if they get their act together early enough and sign up as independents. So what difference does that make in Florida?
You know, well, a key question will be whether, you know, what, you know, it's even more highly centered among what partisan Republicans will do. Like in New Hampshire, for instance, I mean, independents play a big part, but it's still partisan Republicans who make the decision. Now in Florida, it's going to be entirely partisan Republicans, you know, older conservative Republicans. And so it'll be striking to see whether, you know, Romney or Gingrich can appeal to that base. And again, it gets back to this question about, you know, the base. You know, how are they feeling about things? And do they see Romney as their, you know, champion or their leader? And it gets beyond kind of issue positions to, you know, what kind of person we want to send against Obama. And that's where Gingrich has been so successful. And, you know, he repeated again that line on Saturday that, well, I want to have 7 3-hour Lincoln Douglas style debates versus Barack Obama. And when I first heard that months ago, it's, you know, I said, well, OK, that's just another one of Newt's ideas. But I think it's really caught on as this is someone who could take the fight to Barack Obama. And that's what a lot of the Republican base is looking for. And I think one question out there is, can Romney do that? And I think we'll find out whether he can take the fight first to Newt Gingrich.
Well, and it's interesting, and this morning on NPR, Cookie Roberts mentioned that Democrats are, quote, salivating to run against Newt Gingrich, or maybe it was Steve Inskeep who said that. And Cookie Roberts said, well, yes, but don't be too sure. I mean, Democrats see Newt Gingrich as someone who has a lot of baggage, as Rick Santorum has been saying, is unpredictable. Lots of, you know, issues in his past, including his time as speaker, which Rick Santorum has brought up. But Cookie Roberts said this morning, you know, don't salivate too early. I mean, he could be a strong contender, too.
Yeah. And again, look, you look at the you look at turnout, you know, Iowa turnout was kind of it was, you know, about even with 2008. Turnout in New Hampshire, Mitt Romney's backyard, was basically flat, a little higher than 2008. South Carolina, much closer to the Republican base in the South, obviously, big turnout. If Florida turns out to have big turnout, that will be part of and if Gingrich wins, that'll be part of his argument for electability. I can motivate the base. Mitt Romney can't.
Let's take another call. Again, our number here in the exchange, 1-800-892-6477. Dan is calling in from Farmington. Hi, Dan. Thanks for waiting. You're on the exchange.
Hi, good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I think the discussion is getting back to electability again, and that's what prompted me to call in the first place. From a layperson's perspective, I think that that's what this election has been all about since day one. You see a lot of ups and downs and shifts, and people declared dead on arrival, and then miraculous recoveries. And the whole time you hear people saying that the base has been looking for an alternative to the current field, and they're not seeing one. I think the biggest problem that we're seeing in this race is that Republicans as a whole don't really envision any one of these clowns beating Obama in a general election.
Dan, thanks for your call. And how did South Carolinians, Charles, feel about this idea that Dan raises, electability?
Well, we certainly have been hearing that, and we'll continue to hear it. And most people don't want to throw a vote away. Sometimes people want to cast a vote that's principled or from a particular perspective, an issue. Ron Paul fits into the category of folks who are voting for a cause as much as for a candidate. But the shift to Gingrich, I think, is a strong reflection on precisely the electability. Who's the guy who's going to stand up to Obama? So much of this primary race has been not just against each other among the Republicans, but strongly against Obama. Romney tends to focus almost all of his campaign on Obama, which is what the front runner, I suppose, is supposed to do, which is a demonstration of I'm out there and I'm the one who's going to carry the Republican flag. So you have to make the case that you are the candidate who is going to win not in January and March, but in November.
Dante.
Yeah, I mean, if Dan thinks he's hearing a lot of talk about or a lot of nervousness about the candidates that the Republicans have right now, wait until and if Gingrich wins Florida. And there will be a full-out panic among Republican elites confronted with the fact that Newt Gingrich could be their nominee. And there'll be all sorts of talk about a so-called white knight. Well, is it too late to draft somebody? I mean, if Romney is done and
after Florida.
Yeah, which he won't be done, but that would certainly severely hurt his chances. And if Gingrich looks like he's riding high, well, Romney's done. Gingrich will cause all sorts of problems for us down ticket.
I mean, us being establishment.
Yeah.
Elite Republicans.
Well, members of Congress running for re-election, for example, in the Northeast, would get awfully nervous about the prospects of a Gingrich candidacy. Can we get someone else? Can we get Jeb Bush? Can we get Mitch Daniels? And there are all sorts
Haven't we been through this before, though?
Well, yeah, that's certainly true.
About six months ago.
And it's too late for, you know, any such candidate to get on the ballot in most of these states now. So could we have a brokered convention? You know, could someone, you know, could we finally have that thing we've talked about, you know, basically every 4 years for the last four decades?
You know, real quick to this point, too, Charles, if you could, you know, we heard this morning that some Republicans might want to dust the cobwebs off of Chris Christie or Mitch Daniels or somebody.
Well, that's exactly what Don
is saying.
Is that
just crazy at this point?
It happens. It happens almost routinely at some point, right about now, I guess, in most campaigns where you say, none of these guys particularly inspires me. Who else do we have out there? And the answer is, based on the way the system operates, no one. No one really who can jump in.
Let's take another call, gentlemen. This is Richard calling from Haverhill, Mass. Hi, Richard. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange.
Oh, hi, Laura. The commentator's kind of stole my thunder on a broker convention. You know, the people in the Beltway and Wall Street, they really want Romney, you know, in the Republican Party. And, of course, the Tea Party, the evangelicals, and the conservatives would rather have Newt Gingrich. So there is a possibility there could be a broker convention, and that's basically what they wanted to say, Laura, but they kind of commented on that anyway. But thank you.
No, Richard, it's a good point. We hadn't quite gotten to that point yet. So go ahead, Charles. Could we see what he calls a brokered convention where the nominee is actually decided at the convention? We haven't seen that in decades.
No, we have not seen it in a long time, and I'm hard-pressed to remember the last time that we did, but probably not. And to some degree, it's the way the system stretches out and the costs. You start to deal with first expectations. Is a candidate meeting or exceeding expectations? And that's a winnowing factor. Does a candidate gain momentum, what George Bush the elder used to call Big Mo, coming out of Iowa, coming out of New Hampshire? Now there's momentum shifted to Gingrich, but beyond that, momentum equates to money. You can't keep running unless you continue to raise money as we move into the bigger states and the more expensive states. So Florida becomes a very crucial piece. If Gingrich continues to do well, then he has momentum and will continue to raise money and could then match Romney in the long haul, because we at least presume that Romney has a substantial amount of money. The way he's spending it in Florida suggests that. But if Gingrich falters in Florida, then the momentum slips and the money slips, and the candidate best positioned for the long haul starts to pile up delegates. Delegates don't matter yet, but they will.
Dante. Yeah, I mean, Charles makes a good point. I mean, for all the you know, it seems like each of these candidates has this near-death experience every week. But if, you know, if Mitt Romney wins Florida next week, a lot of this all goes away. And it's certainly fair to point out that it's often the case that the nominees of parties lose primaries along the way. It's rare that you find someone with a perfect record, unblemished from wire to wire. That's all true. It was striking, though, that John Sununu, former governor of New Hampshire, key Mitt Romney backer, was talking in the past few days about, well, it's going to be a slog to the nomination for Mitt Romney. And it's a bit like, he said, Gerald Ford versus Ronald Reagan, which was a race back in 1976 for the Republican nomination. And there you had, perhaps like this time, an establishment, moderate, right-of-center candidate versus firebrand, insurgent, conservative. That Ford versus Reagan went on for quite a while. And that might, you know, it's possible we might have one of those cases just like we had with Clinton versus Obama in 08, a prolonged battle that reaches, if not to the convention, close to the convention.
Well, let me ask you about that. And Charles, to you, you know, some people are saying this could end up, as Dante said, like the long Obama-Clinton nomination struggle 4 years ago. How much do you see this like that, and how different is it?
Well, it has the potential, to be sure. And quite frankly, I'd like to see a longer, more drawn-out process. I don't think it's terribly fair that 3 or 4 states out of 50 at last count, I think we still have 50, should have such a disproportionate share, but that's my own personal opinion. You learn more and more about the candidates in the process, and these are people that we're electing to an extraordinarily powerful office. I think the more we know, the better.
Well, and one school of thought, Charles, is that it hurts the eventual nominee and the party. They spend all this time and money, you know, slinging mud at each other instead of the president. Another school of thought, though, is that Obama's long path to the nomination made him a better general election candidate. I'm wondering which school of thought you subscribe to, Charles.
I'd like to enroll in the latter school.
Really?
If it's all right.
It's a good thing.
I think it's a good thing. I think certainly it's good for the voters. It may be tougher for the candidate, but it's that kind of preparation that gets you ready for the 3-month burst from Labor Day until November's Election Day, when you've got to be in the battle day after day after day. And the other aspect of it is, if there are warts, if there are problems, they tend to come out at this stage of the process rather than in the latter days.
What do you think, Dante? Which school do you go to?
Yeah, I agree with Charles.
Really?
I mean, I think it's well, you know, you want the best. If you're a Republican, you want the best nominee possible who's going to be able to take the fight to the other party. And surely, you know, Barack Obama was a better candidate at the end of his protracted primary battle with Hillary Clinton than he was in the beginning. Mitt Romney's got to figure out how he is going to connect, for instance, with white working class voters in places like Florida, but also Pennsylvania, Ohio, and other swing states.
As Sergio told us, people in Florida are really feeling the pain of the slowdown. Go ahead, Dante.
Yeah. And it's much better for him to try and figure that out now in battling Newt Gingrich than in 4 or 5 months, because certainly Barack Obama's campaign is going to focus on exactly those sorts of issues. Romney needs to be able to prove, and this week will be evidence, a test, that he can take a punch and deliver one in return. For a lot of these primaries that we've seen, Romney succeed in being above the fray, because it's been, say, Michelle Bachmann versus Rick Perry versus Newt Gingrich versus Rick Santorum, all these anti-Romney candidates going at each other. Romney's been able to stay above the fray, but there's an advantage to being in the fray, because you're certainly going to be in the fray when it's Mitt Romney or whoever versus Barack Obama.
I have to ask you guys one more quick question about the Republican race, and then a broader question about how this shapes up for the general election. And to you, Charles, Ron Paul, very popular here in New Hampshire, came in a very respectable second to Mitt Romney. Is he basically out of it if he didn't do so well in South Carolina, came in last, not competing in Florida, so he won't even be part of that headline? Is this it for Ron Paul?
Well, not according to Ron Paul. He's prepared to run a long race, and his is not the same kind of a campaign. It's got a smaller staff. It's kind of a grassroots, live off the land approach to things. It's in some ways, I'm slightly hesitant to suggest that it's like a Ross Perot campaign, but it's out there in that same sort of way that it's got 15% to 18% of the Republicans who like what they hear Ron Paul say. They may not totally understand it, but it sounds good in the promise, and he can sustain that. And if you get to way down the road the notion of a brokered convention, he could have some impact.
I see. So he can use his delegates, Charles, to have some sway.
Very much so.
Interesting. Dante?
Yeah, I mean, Ron Paul's in for the long haul. He wants to be part of the conversation from beginning to end. And he's done well in caucuses. I mean, he did well, for example, in the Iowa straw poll last summer. His people will turn out for caucuses. And so it makes sense for him, like, why spend a lot of money As Sergio said earlier, in a state with not much of a libertarian leaning, that's an awful lot of money to plunge into a state with a very poor return. So I think actually this is a smart move by Ron Paul.
And Charles, real quick, too, if I could, President Obama's State of the Union address is Tuesday night, NHPR. We'll carry that speech live, by the way, at 9 p.m., and then we'll offer up analysis here on the exchange the next day. How will the president address some of the themes that are coming up in the Republican presidential nomination? He won't discuss it directly, but you got to think that some of the themes will be reflected in what he says.
I think it's fair to characterize the State of the Union address as President Obama's first formal approach to the 2012 reelection campaign. It's a chance for him to appear in a very favorable time frame, presidential, for one, addressing the issues. The backdrop is far more conducive to Obama showing, look, I'm the guy who's got the job, not the one who aspires to it. And while those other guys are duking it out down there, here's what I'm going to do. And of course, he's got to address all the economic issues. When it comes down to it, what South Carolinians primarily voted on was their hopes for an improving economy.
What do you think, Dante?
Yeah, and again, it gets back to, I think, again, white working class voters, blue collar voters. Obama's going to try to talk about how economy is getting better. You know, things are turning around. But he's going to try to, you know, kind of stay above the fray and let the Republicans go at each other. But he's going to mark some of those same themes, I think, in his own way.
All right. Well, as I said, the speech is at 9, and HPR will be carrying it, and we'll provide some analysis the next day on the exchange of that speech. Gentlemen, I want to thank both of you very much for joining us. Charles Bierbauer, it's been a busy week last week for you. I sure appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you, Lauren.
Charles Bierbauer, Dean of the College of Mass Communications and Information Studies at the University of South Carolina, former White House correspondent for CNN. Dante Scala, always a pleasure. Thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
Dante Scala, Associate Professor in the Department of Political Science at UNH. He tweets at Granite Prof. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Karen Gohl. The Exchange is now on Facebook. Join our page to continue the conversation and learn more about what we're doing every day. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Canoia.